Though there was land and sea and air, it was unstable land, unswimmable water, air needing light. Nothing retained its shape. One thing obstructed another, because in the one body, cold fought with heat, moist with dry, soft with hard, and weight weightless things.
So, this is a passage from the first book of Ovid's Metamorphoses, describing his view on the concept of chaos. Rather, chaos with a capital C, a deity. I love this passage in particular because it's so descriptive and vague at the same time. The word chaos isn't even mentioned in it, and yet it is the most cohesive and complete description of chaos that there is. It probably doesn't sound much like what you think of when you think of chaos. Because according to Ovid, chaos is anything but empty. But more of that later. There's a lot of mythology surrounding chaos as a god. We will look at some of the variations which first emerged centuries before Ovid was even alive.
Welcome to our Chaos Podcast. Today we are going to be talking about three views expressed by classical authors in order of publication. My name is Ismay.
And I'm Moniz. And we are students of the Humanities Honors Program of Utrecht University.
This podcast is part of an interactive journaling experience provided to you by our Honors Research Seminar Group, consisting of 7 Humanities Honors students. If you would like to partake in this journaling experience yourself, you can find a free PDF version of our interactive journal on our website, chaos101.sites.uu.nl, as well as further information on our research about chaos. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
If there is anything to be feared in the ancient world, it is the unknown. Death, the change of seasons, the creation of the universe. All of these things were a mystery to the Greeks and Romans. With a natural desire to make sense of these things, myths were created around phenomena. One of these is the myth of chaos.
So, the classical authors we're going to be discussing today are Hesiod, Virgil, and Ovid. And Humanes did a lot of research about exactly what they thought and wrote of and about chaos. So let's get started with the first author, chronologically speaking, Hesiod. Can you tell me something about him?
Of course. So I figured we would start with the earliest documentation of chaos known from the classical world, which was written by Hesiod. And he was born in 800 before Christ, somewhere around that time. The majority of his life is a mystery, so I guess we should just jump right in with what he wrote. So, first off, the most famous Greek epics of all time are the Odyssey and the Iliad, written by Homer. I feel like everyone knows this already. You might be wondering why I'm bringing up Homer, because he has nothing to do with this story whatsoever. But the thing is that he wrote, especially in the Odyssey, kind of a first idea of Greek cosmology. So he mentioned the gods, he mentioned the creation of the universe a little bit throughout the story. However, it was absolute chaos, pun intended, because there was no structure to it whatsoever. And the thing that Hesiod did was bring structure to this chaotic view of cosmology that Homer brought to the table. So in his own work, which is called the Theogony, he basically kind of gives an order of how the universe was created as a whole. And the order is as follows. I'm going to break it down for you. So we start with chaos, void, nothing exists. There is absolutely nothing in the world whatsoever. Then Gaia emerges, or Gaia, which translates to Earth. Then comes Tartarus, which is the underworld. Eros, meaning love. Erebos, which is darkness, not to be confused with the underworld. And Erebos basically has intercourse with night, and together they give birth to Aether, which translates to light, and also day. So that's basically the first order of the primal forces as how they come into the world, one succeeding another. And Hesiod basically introduces chaos in a sentence, and it goes, "In the beginning, there was only chaos, the abyss." So right off the bat, we know how he views chaos, and it's basically void. It's nothing. It's empty. That's his idea of chaos. And it's the start of the rest of the world, because in that nothingness, the other primal forces come into being. And they all give birth to one another. And yeah, so that's basically it.
Okay, so in this case, chaos wouldn't be a deity itself.
Well, it is, in the sense that it's kind of complicated. So most people know the Greek gods, Zeus, Poseidon, Hera, all of those. And they are the Olympic gods, and they're very personalized and characterized in a sense. They have a gender, they have clear attributes, they have, some of them even have a clear appearance. And these are, they are called gods in the sense that they are divine, but they're more, they're primal forces. They're concepts that don't have any sense of identity on their own, but they are called like gods. They are gods, they're just not the classical gods that we know, because they're abstract and they are what they say they are. So they are earth, they are night, light, they're all around us.
Does Hesiod then mean that chaos disappeared as soon as these other primal forces came into being? Or is there still chaos, according
to
him? No,
and that's the interesting part of it. I feel like chaos on its own is not the word, in this case, is not the word that we use it as today at all. So chaos was a state of being. It was the state of the world when there was nothing at all. And it kind of disappeared when other forces came into being. Whereas the other things, as you can see, we still have Earth, the underworld, well, it's not there, but like the Greeks thought it was still there. Same goes for love and light and day, like we could not live without those things. Whereas chaos was just the beginning of the world. And I think somewhere in one of his works, he actually refers back to chaos. And then you can clearly see that he refers to it as a certain time in history. So it's something that's not there anymore.
Oh, that's very interesting. It's also a very simplified version of how the world came into being.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so one of the main things we'll be looking at today is how the different authors view chaos, and specifically whether they give it a negative connotation or not. Because we all know, in our everyday lives, nobody likes chaos. Nobody deals with that very well. No. We hate it, basically.
Yes,
I know.
It's the word that I use to describe every project that's not going according to plan.
Exactly. My entire life used to be chaos. It's still, but anyways, we're not talking about me today. So basically, the interesting thing about Hesiod is that his connotation of chaos is actually very positive in a way, because he describes the creation of the universe as a very fruitful thing. He kind of romanticizes it in a way, because, it's a poem, obviously, so there's always going to be that kind of romantic aspect, but he goes even further than that. He kind of describes it as a dance, because as I already mentioned, the way that he describes one force emerging into another, he kind of gives it like a maternal aspect, because they're pregnant, literally pregnant with each other. He literally says that night is pregnant with day, and that's something that you don't come across very often when you're talking about darkness or the underworld or chaos. But basically, it's almost like a thank you to chaos, because not necessarily that it's responsible, but more that if chaos was never there, the rest of the world wouldn't be either. So it's almost like he celebrates the creation of the universe, and it all came from chaos. So even though it's empty, it turned into a very fruitful thing.
Yes, to me it sounds like it's still, like, chaos is still very vague. It still doesn't explain how the world came into being. It's just... It's very interesting, but also I feel like I would still have questions if I lived there around that time when Hesiod was telling these stories. I would still be confused.
Honestly, I think even Hesiod was still confused. I think the thing is that, as you said, it's like brutally simple, because I can literally read it aloud, but it says, so like I said, in the beginning there was only chaos, the abyss, but then Gaia and Earth came into being. No explanation whatsoever. That's just how it is. You just take it or leave it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's still very similar to, like, creation of the world stories and other religions that are still in effect today. But this one is especially... Yeah, it doesn't have much of a beginning other than chaos. Chaos is the beginning.
Yeah, and it's nothing more than that.
Like, that's how the word started, but it's not at all... Like, we don't mean the same thing with it at all anymore.
No, and that's why it's funny, because to me... This is the view of chaos that I resonate with the least. Like, I don't see chaos as a positive thing at all. But it's still my favorite view of chaos that I've ever come across in my life. Because it's not like, it's kind of neutral in the sense that you don't feel negative or positive towards it, because it's not there anymore. It's something that used to be. And technically, we would not be here if it wasn't for chaos in the beginning. So in a way, it kind of embraces the existence of chaos, because it's kind of... what created the universe in a way. And I thought that was very, very interesting. And another thing that I really love about the mythology of chaos as a whole. It's not just Hesiod that said it this way, but basically this order of primal forces, like I just named them, is kind of accepted all around. So this is the general cosmology in the classical world. And another thing I love about this is that there's material forces, and then there is very, how do you say that? Abstract forces, I don't know. I just love that love, actually, is just as present in the world as Earth is. They both build like the foundation for the rest of the world, and they're both equally as big a part of that as one another. And that's what I really love about it.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful way of looking at it. When I heard about Hesiod's view, I was, it just evoked skepticism in me, because I'm just like, well, it still doesn't make sense. Why are you explaining it this way? You're not explaining anything. But when you look at it as poetry and just as the thing that allowed for the world to be this way, like the emptiness that was like capable of being filled or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that then it's just a beautiful poetic way of looking at it, but not a very nice explanation.
Well, I like that you're being critical, because like I said, it's not my favorite either. But I do think it's important to also note that there was no, like, there were no humans in this time. And I don't want to get ahead of myself, but a part of it is that we're not going to understand it ever, because we're not on the same level as these deities. So I feel like in his way, he just wanted to kind of bring down the concept and let everyone know what the hell was going on in the Odyssey and in the mythological world whatsoever, because nobody actually knew how the world was created, and Hesiod kind of attempted to bring some structure to this. But I also think that's like a very interesting paradox, because it's a very structurized text. It has like very small lines, and it like describes the universe in chronological order, but it's talking about chaos where there is no order at all. So I just thought that was very interesting, because he's basically trying to make sense of a concept that we're never going to understand. And I think maybe he knew that, but
this way he just explains like, we're never going to understand, and this is why.
Basically, yeah. And I kind of like that, because I think the whole thing, like the essence of mythology is trying to make sense of something that you don't understand. Like if you put yourself in that time where you were just walking around on the street in your little sandals or whatever, and suddenly lightning strikes from above. If you've never seen lightning before ever in your life, you must be like, well, this is the end of the world. Like, you know, I've seen the light. I'm going to die now. So basically, I feel like this is a personal, I have no sources for this, but it's just a personal opinion. I just feel like because these things happened and people just feared the unknown, like everyone does that, making sense of it by creating a story and then having a god that you can worship in order to prevent something terrible from happening to you, I feel like that maybe gave peace and also structure. So Hesiod is not the first person to do this, but he is one of the first that we know of, which is why I really wanted to include him in this, because like I said, 800 before Christ is crazy long ago.
So. Yeah. Well, then I'm also interested about the next author, Virgil, because he really introduces, I think, a view of chaos that's slightly more similar to what we know nowadays.
Exactly. So Virgil, who was born in 70 before Christ, has a little bit more of a story around himself and a story around the story. Allow me to elaborate. So basically, he was one of the greatest classical poets of all time, one of the most famous names. And there's not too much known about his youth, but we do know that he was actually meant to pursue a career in rhetorics, which is public speaking. But he was too shy for this. So he gave a speech once, and then he was like, this is not for me. And then he turned to poetry. And his most famous work is the Aeneid, which consists of 12 books telling the story of Aeneas, who was a Trojan prince. And he was on a mission to build the city of Rome eventually. So Virgil was about 51 years old when he finished the Aeneid, and then he fell ill and he died shortly after. And it actually said in his testament that he really wished for someone to destroy the manuscript. He didn't want anyone to read the Aeneid because it wasn't finished and he just wasn't satisfied with it. But the emperor Augustine at the time refused to destroy it and actually published it. So that's how we can read it today, because of one very stubborn emperor. The story consists of 10,000 verses. It's crazy long, which is also why I can't really summarize it, because obviously we have to stick to the program and it's about chaos today. So I'll just kind of get to the point. The interesting thing is that chaos is not mentioned in the Aeneid ever. It's not about chaos as a god, because like we stated earlier, chaos was the beginning of time and then it kind of vanished. So what I'm going to do is take the modern definition of the word chaos and talk about how that is represented in the Aeneid, because it's definitely there. In fact, it's a huge part of the story. So when you look at the Aeneid as a whole, it kind of plays with the balance between chaos and order, so disorder and order. And this is also very much reflected in war and peace and the difference between those two things. So like I said, this is mostly about chaos in everyday life, specifically chaos in the everyday life of Greek soldiers, because the story is about the Trojan War. And basically, when I was researching this, I read a very interesting thesis about the motive of giving gifts as storytelling within the Aeneid, and saying that kind of making peace by giving gifts is what is almost like an antidote to chaos. So there is all this war and violence and corruption, and then by giving gifts, you kind of, it's like a counterbalance, and then it all kind of evens out into, I guess, peace is what it comes down to.
So essentially, you give a gift, so I will forgive the chaos.
Basically, yeah. And I mean, it's not even that weird, because when I think of one time when I think I was like 7, I had a fight with my mom, and then she got really mad at me, and then I felt bad, so then I made a drawing for her. And it's kind of the same concept. Like, I use that drawing kind of to make amends with my mother. So that's basically what it comes down to.
Yes, but then is that necessarily chaos the way we look at it? Like, for example, the mathematical version of chaos with the butterfly effect, like a very small change in initial conditions causes an outcome that seems random to us, right?
Yeah.
So is it like I caused chaos, so now here's a gift and it's solved?
I mean, I feel like, first of all, we should look at it as not like an individual thing, because it's more like the concept of war instead of just like soldiers like between each other or something. But it's more like, I guess what they're, okay, so I'm just gonna look up an example because this is getting really, really vague. I'm sorry, but basically there is one passage in the Aeneid where Aphrodite, Venus in Latin, because obviously the Aeneid is Latin. I don't think I mentioned that. I'm so sorry. Okay, so Virgil is Latin. He's a Roman writer. So Aphrodite, but in this case, obviously Venus, talks to his son, which is Aeneas, the prince that the whole story is about. And she basically tells him that the gods are responsible for all the corruption and violence in the world. And I thought that was very interesting, because again, chaos is not mentioned, but you can definitely see it that way. Because when we look at the order of how things came into being, the very first thing there ever was chaos. And then obviously you have the primal forces, then you have the Titans, and then the Olympic gods. So you could argue that gods are literally, that they literally come from chaos. But also, I think his name was Prometheus, that one of them actually handed fire to humans. Like, he came down from Olympus and he gave fire to the world. So that's obviously a very literal example. But you could argue that the same goes for chaos and corruption, because the Olympic gods were like the most problematic characters you can think of. And I just thought it was interesting that his mother quite literally says that to him, because he's fighting a war that the gods practically started.
So in this case, war can be seen as chaos itself, and then by like reconciling, making peace through, amongst other things, giving gifts, we kind of decrease the amount of chaos in the world.
Yeah, we try to make sense of it, basically. Because I think in this entire story, the balance between disorder and order, which is what comes close to what chaos is to us, and the balance between war and peace are kind of the same. So that's why you can kind of build bridges between them.
So chaos is, again, this thing that's like the beginning. It's, but in this case, it is still everywhere. It's not a historical period in the past. It's just this constant state of being, and we can cope with it by creating structure and
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
it's just, it's a part of our lives. And like I said, especially when it comes to war, because you can plan it out. Obviously, there's structure to war because there's a strategy. You have different ranks within the army, but you can never fully prepare for a war because you don't know how it's going to go. There's always that aspect of unpredictability. And then by kind of making peace, the whole chaotic aspect of war kind of vanishes. And then obviously the interesting kind of paradox to that is the Trojan horse, because it is a gift. Essentially, it's a gift, but it only led to way more chaos because yes. there was Greek soldiers inside. So that's kind of like a funny bridge between the two.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fake gift, so...
And then also, this is totally random, but when I was thinking about this, I randomly thought about a quote from Harry Potter. I don't remember which of the movies it was, but it's from Professor Dumbledore. And he says, "Happiness can be found in the darkest of places if only one remembers to turn on the light." And I know that this makes no sense, but I don't know how I came up with this, but I just started thinking about the fact that there is no light without darkness, which is kind of what he's saying. And similarly, the Trojans wouldn't know peace if they'd never had war. The same way that we don't, and we don't know productivity without boredom. We don't know, I mean, I can go on forever, but like there's only, you can only know something if you know the other outcome of it. And in that same way, we wouldn't know what order was or clarity if we had never had to cope with chaos.
Oh, that's a very interesting way of looking at it. Like, structure can be found in even the most chaotic of times.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that actually ties in very well with another episode that's going to kind of come up later about politics, because in that one, we also discussed that we need to deal with chaos. Even if we accept that everything is chaotic, we still need means of representing the world to us that makes sense, that aren't chaotic, because our brains aren't meant to deal with chaos.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. This definitely comes closer than Hesiod's discussion of chaos right. to the way we define it now.
Yeah.
We could move on to the last author, which is Ovid.
Ovid.
Yes.
Yay, my fave. So we're going to come full circle now, because we're going back to where we started in the beginning, which
fragment
is
a, with, that I read
exactly.
at the beginning. Yes.
Yeah, that was his, one of my favorites. So Ovid was born somewhere around 43 before Christ. So he's basically, when we look at specifically Roman poets, which is Virgil and also Ovid, there's two generations of poets that people talk about. I don't remember all the names, but I do know that Virgil is considered to be of the older generation, whereas Ovid is one of the younger generation. Actually, Ovid met Virgil once in his life, which he talks about in his autobiography. And basically, Ovid started out, he studied in Milan, and then he went to Rome, and he studied to pursue a political career, because that's what his father really wanted for him. In fact, he quite literally pushed him into politics. But Ovid always knew that poetry was in his heart, so he turned to poetry instead. And he made his debut when he was 27. I think they were poems about love. They're not that famous. They're not that relevant either. But by far, his most relevant work is what we're going to talk about today, which is, of course, the Metamorphoses. He wrote those when he was in his 30s. And they're basically, I always feel like they remind me of fairy tales, because they're 10 books and they have shorter stories within them that don't, sometimes they intertwine with each other, but usually they don't. And it's just about, kind of as the title already gives away, someone undergoing a metamorphosis. So they change from one form into another. And you can think of the craziest things. Like a lot of them change into trees, which is kind of funny to me. But also into swans, into... One of my favorites is when Octaion turns into a deer. So he was a man, he turned into a deer, then he got eaten by his own hounds, which is kind of, you know, tragic. But I could go on forever. There's countless stories like this out there. And the book starts with chaos, because essentially that is the very first metamorphosis, because it's that of the world. The world changes as it appears, because it starts out with chaos. Okay, so the interesting thing about Ovid is that his definition of chaos is, well, he doesn't say that it's negative, but you can definitely interpret it as being negative. And also what I like about it is that it is in such a huge contrast with what Hesiod said, because he really kind of stressed the fact that it's void. There's nothing there. Whereas Ovid kind of says that it's everything at once. So there's this other small passage that he says about chaos, and I'm going to read it to you. And it says, "Before there was earth or sea or the sky that covers everything, nature appeared the same throughout the whole world. What we call chaos, a raw, confused mass, nothing but inert matter, badly combined, discordant atoms of things confused in one place." So this is a lot more messy in definition. And basically, the world stayed that way until Kronos came around. And Kronos is the primal force of time. And I like this because Kronos quite literally gives order to the world. It says that he pushes the mountains in one place. He stretches out the sea. He pulls the coastline in its place. And everything kind of has a place of its own and where it belongs. And it stays there. And I like this because when I think of the chaos in my own life, the one thing I use to make sense of it is time, always, because we plan things out. And if we trace it back to chaos according to Ovid, that would literally be how the entire world did that too. There was chaos until time was there. And I really like that concept.
That's very interesting indeed, because like my brother is really into the beta stuff. He really enjoys talking about physics. And he explains to me this, like, I think it was relativity theory, but honestly, I have a humanities brain. This is not my thing. But he explained to me with, I think it was relativity theory, that time actually also isn't a constant. So I think it's interesting that here actually time is the thing that solves chaos. And it's also interesting to see that still with this Ovid guy, they don't use chaos in everyday life. Like, oh, this is such a chaotic meeting.
No.
Or something like that.
No. So, yeah, exactly. That's very interesting. I just like because you can kind of see it as a metaphor. Because Kronos, like, physically fights chaos and, like, makes sense of it. And then if you take that as a metaphor, time does fight chaos, like you just said. So I think that's very interesting. So overall, you could say that there is a very negative connotation with chaos in this sense, because it is something that had to be put in place before the rest of the world could even be there. Whereas when we look at the theogony of Hesiod, it was more like one thing led to another, and chaos, it didn't, like, it wasn't destroyed or it wasn't beaten in any way. It just was there at one point and then it wasn't there anymore. So like what you said at the beginning, Esme, about there not being any explanation as to how that happened, here you do, because there's a full-on passage about Kronos fighting chaos. So it does make more sense this way.
Yeah, so again, chaos is kind of characterized as this thing that needs to be fought.
Yeah.
Like, only the first writer we discussed, Hesiod, he was the only one who kind of described it in a somewhat positive or even neutral manner.
Yeah.
But the other two really act like this is something that we don't want.
Exactly. And that's why I really love talking about this, and specifically the combination of these three authors, because when we use chaos, we all kind of know what it's about and we all mean the same thing when we use the word. Whereas here, like in nearly every single way, these things are so different, because in Hesiod's version, chaos is nothing. When I think of like his description, it kind of, it feels like it's floating, like it's there, but it's not tied down to anything. It's very light. Whereas in Ovid's version, it's heavy. It weighs something and it's everything at once. And there's no order whatsoever. Everything just floats through each other. And it's something that's kind of dangerous. And especially also in Virgil's version, chaos is a huge threat in every single way. So they're all different. And that's something that I didn't even know myself. Before I started researching this.
It's very interesting to see that nobody likes chaos. Nobody wants to think that chaos is still all around us all the time. And yet in the other episodes that are about to come up, in the one about mathematics, in the one about politics, and for sure, and I'm pretty sure also the one about art, we talk about how chaos is constantly around us and how we can see the beauty in it. So it's very interesting how these like origins of the word be kind of ignored almost in later uses of the word.
Exactly. And also, I just this doesn't really have anything to do with chaos itself. I just thought it was funny to mention there's just as much chaos, actually, pun intended, yet again, in the life of Ovid himself, because there's one point in his life that we don't know anything about, and he mentions in his autobiography that he was banished at one point to Tomis. Nobody actually knows if this is true. This could either be true because of the things that he said in his work, and maybe it offended the emperor, could be. But there's also people who think that he faked it, and that he just wrote it down for like a shock value to have people be more interested in his story. And the very last sentences of the Metamorphoses, he says that he kind of predicts that even after he dies, his work will be studied for centuries to come. And he's basically like, I know people are gonna still going to read this, and I will live on in my words. And I just think that's genius, because here we are literally still talking about him in 2021.
Yeah. That is also very interesting, because the way we discuss chaos in chaos theory, which is going to come up in the next episode, it's that unpredictability or randomness kind of emerges over time. So then over time, we can see that in this case, he says, over time, I'm still going to be there, so nothing is going to change. But within chaos theory, actually, that's entirely unpredictable, and we would have no idea. So he really looked at chaos and was like, no, I'm different.
Exactly.
Very fascinating. And also that they genuinely didn't have the conception of chaos the way we deal with chaos theory, or the way we use it nowadays. Yeah. They just didn't have that at all.
Which is so funny, because chaos is a Greek word, chaos.
Yeah.
So it's the same word. It just got a completely different meaning over the centuries.
Yes, but we still find similarities. Like, when I look at these ways of looking at chaos, I don't think, wow, this is completely different. We totally took that out of context. I think there's still a reason we chose to use this word.
Yeah.
But it has definitely changed over time.
I honestly think the only general definition that we can take from this, where it's the same for all three, is that it is something where there is just a lack of order and there is no structure to it whatsoever. I think that's literally the only aspect of chaos that's the same for these three authors, because they're so, so different in characterizing it. And for example, I mean, Virgil doesn't even mention chaos on its own, so we can just kind of throw that off the table. When we look at Hesiod, he's very neutral in describing it. It is vague, literally. The only word he uses to describe it is void, and that's kind of it. Whereas Ovid, just like everything he's ever written, he's very much, he's very witty. So he creates these whole characters around every single character that is in his stories. And chaos is one of those. And I just think that's amazing, because chaos is literally nothing. And even if it was something at one point, humans weren't alive around that point. So he just took something that he basically knew nothing about and created this whole character for it, because when you read about it, the way that he describes it, there are so many nouns and adjectives that he puts in there, and describing it from like how it would weigh to what it would look like all of that. He's very much detailed in his description, almost like the way that he describes the Olympic gods, because they all have a very, very vibrant personality in his stories. And he knew what he was doing, because he even did that with chaos. And I just think that's very, very impressive, honestly.
Yes, looking at how they actually characterize or personify chaos.
Yeah.
Or at least some of them do, not all of them. And this also links, of course, to the journal experience. We have a page where you can actually draw what you would think chaos personified looks like. And we would love to see these results. I'm very curious to see the different imaginations of chaos.
Actually, I wanted to ask you, Esme, what did you think of? Because we know that there is a lot of discussion about whether chaos has a gender. And what did you see? Like, if you imagine chaos as a person, what would it look like?
Oh, that's a very good question.
Because I just know that it's a man. I just know.
I would just think of, I took art class in high school, and which was very unlike me, because I'm a very, structured, organized person. Everything has to always make sense. And But that classroom was very like chaotic in our modern use of the word. So I would just picture like one of the art girls with like messy ponytail paint all over her.
That's perfect. So I just asked this question to Ismay, obviously, but I also want to ask it to you who's listening. And you can also answer this question and many more in the journal.
Yes, and in the journal, there are also other prompts, like which of these philosophers do you identify with the most? Whose description of chaos do you prefer? And which one challenges your view the most? And how would you try to fight it? And on that same note, Moniz, what do you think?
Well, I find it hard to say because I've honestly grown very fond of all of them. But I think, okay, so my favorite, like I think I already gave it away, but my favorite is Hesiod. The way that he describes it is just so beautiful, which actually this is genuinely like a recommendation. If you're curious as to how there's a lot of translation out there, there's literal translations and also poetic translations, and they're so beautiful. So I highly recommend you check those out. But for me, I think the one I feel like overlaps the most with my view of chaos would be Virgil, because I do kind of see chaos as a threat, and it's something that is present in everyday life. Like, it's not just something that was a part of the creation of the universe at one point, but it's still there, I feel like. So I think his is the most accurate from my perspective.
Yes, I think my view would be kind of similar. I also think that providing structure to chaos is kind of something we need to do. That's not to say that chaos is entirely bad. In the mathematical episode, we will actually be discussing some reasons why chaos is good and how we can use it even for medical reasons. But that's for next episode. But we definitely need something to provide structure for like a way for us to represent the world in a way that makes sense to our tiny human brains. But I also thought that the description of Ovid, like the passage that I read at the beginning of this episode, I thought that was really beautiful.
Yeah.
So I like to look at that way, but like my realistic brain knows that
it's not yours. Yeah.
So these are all very interesting questions that we would like you to reflect upon in the interactive journal that you can find on our website, or maybe you already have it and that's how you got here. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. And there are many interesting episodes yet to come, many of which we have already mentioned here. We're going to be talking about chaos theory in the very next episode. Art is going to come up, and even politics, because obviously politicians need to deal with chaos a lot. And even conspiracy theories will be mentioned.
Ooh.
So stay tuned for all our next episodes. And thank you so much for listening.